Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion on current events, always laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less. In fact, I heard that was repeated by B.B. King today. Earlier in the day, I hosted the Brown Briefly, not the Brown Briefly, my radio show, and we played B.B. King, and that was one of his quotes. Less is more, more or less. How about that? Maybe that's where Brian got it. We don't
maybe
know.
Maybe that's where B.B. King got it.
Maybe that's where B.B. King got it. We just don't know, do we? So let me introduce the panel this morning. It includes historian, professor, down under aficionado, Dr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad you're here. And our fairy maven, part-time politico, full-time executive director of the Vachon household, a playwright, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, guest Amy Dreyer.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Glad you're here. Missing today. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I almost skipped you, didn't I?
Sorry. Am I missing?
Sorry. Sorry, Craig. Our legal eagle, consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, and two-time Fulbright Scholar, Mr. Craig Bellis.
Well, it's great to be here. It's a beautiful day, and I am here.
You are here. Well, mostly. You're mostly right. Here. Yeah, okay. Missing today, though, is our avid defender of justice and mariner, cyclist, top secret engineer, former top secret engineer, I should say, Kevin Jones. He's out on his boat somewhere in South Puget Sound. I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch at Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in downtown Vachon. And we have some very, very special guests today. On September 19th and the 21st, the Vachon Opera production of Cinderella, which their website claims is a classic rags-to-riches fairy tale set to lush melodies by a master of French Romanticism composer Jules Massenet. Got to say that correctly. Today, we're honored to have three of the principals of this production. Sarah Coit.
Hi.
And she plays Cinderella. Grace Skinner.
Hello.
Hey, Grace. She plays Prince Charming, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. And Andy Pappas, who plays?
Cinderella's father, Pandolf. Howdy.
There you go. I wanted you to say Pandolf because I knew I was going to say it correctly because I did look it up. I had to. Say, before we jump into our small talk segment this morning, we always like to go around the table and kind of see what was going on with folks during the week. Craig, let's start with you. What happened with you this week?
Well, I only got actually 2 weeks, but I'm not going to spend all of my time talking about that. I wasn't here last week. I took a week off. My wife and I went back to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and to the Lake Country of Minnesota for her 50th high school reunion and a family reunion to see a bunch of family members. And we had an absolutely wonderful time back there in that area. And her graduating class at the high school in Sioux Falls, Washington High, had a class of 700.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah. So a few of them showed up for the reunion. And it was a good time was had by all. Yeah. Wow. And it was all under one roof.
Wow.
Was that for the whole state?
No.
Yeah.
No, there were, I think,
it's
there
what
were,
you think it was.
There,
right?
were, there were two or three other high schools in Sioux Falls.
In the state? Oh.
No.
You're
have
stuck
you been
that,
to Sioux
Amy?
Falls, Amy? Have you been to Sioux Falls?
I must confess I have not.
Well, then you're not talking anymore.
All right, then I gotta go. I gotta go, man.
You can't be putting my wife's state down.
I got an avid defender here. I'll back off.
But we had a wonderful, wonderful time. The other thing was just yesterday, the movie at the Vachon Theater, Rebel with a Clause, about the grammarian who went around to all 50 states and set up a grammar table and talk to people about their grammar complaints or their grammar questions, And it was a wonderful movie that's already won multiple awards as a documentary, because it involves much more than just grammar. It involves talking to people of all political bents and whatnot, and how that went, and how when you're talking about nothing but grammar, you don't get into too much trouble. So, but that was another wonderful thing that happened this last week. So there you go.
All right. Outstanding. Amy, let's jump over to you. How about what happened with you this week?
What happened? Well, we raised the roof for Vashon Household on Saturday night. Yeah. Not only did we have a fantastic time with the coop and a really good meal, Matt Dillon just, oh man, he lived right up to every bit of hype and blew it out the door with the salmon dinner and the farm to table salads. And it was fantastic. But we are still reeling because we were able to raise $300,000 for Vashon Household.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Whoa. Yeah, absolutely. No, with gifts and pledges before the event and at the event, we raised about $175,000 at the event and had quite a bit pledged beforehand. So we are thrilled because I won't say that money is already spent, but it's
easily,
earmarked.
Easily spent.
We know how that works.
It is earmarked. Yeah, no, but incredibly generous. And I'm still exhausted from it because, you know, that's an all day, all night kind of thing to set up. But really, really just a really fun time. The station was really cool. You know, it's old Kimco building and there's a great field back there. So I kind of liked how it felt like Vashon Household. You know, it was a little bit urban. It was still... kind of casual, farm to table. We were right there in town, you know, kind of. I really liked the vibe, and I think it was a good night overall. And I would be remiss if I did not compliment the Vashon baking community for the dessert dash, because we had some fantastic desserts to accompany Mr. Dillon's meal. So thank you, Vashon and neighbors. And now we'll keep going.
I heard about the dessert dash. I heard there was one key lime pie that was almost like a cheesecake. It was
indeed.
So big.
Indeed.
Wow.
That came from the hardware store, folks. You can mosey on down to the hardware store and get yourself one of the most acclaimed desserts at the Raise the Roof celebration.
There you go. Yeah. Bruce, how about you?
Kind of a quiet weekend. I really had a question about the grammar table. Did they resolve the Oxford comma question?
Oh.
They didn't exactly resolve it. They addressed it. But she did a wonderful job about talking about how there isn't a hard and fast rule any longer. And a lot of it has to do with the rhythm and pace of the sentence.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And the intent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Context is everything, right?
Indeed. Yeah.
but a pretty quiet weekend. I mean, sort of, it really feels like the end of summer. I mean, it's Saturday, you know, sort of cool, rainy, blowy, sort of like, man, oh, man. But today, grab it while it's here, at least. But,
supposed to get up to 80-something today.
Yeah, I know. Just amazing.
Yeah, yeah, right? Can you believe it?
So we'll take it. But right. This may be the last of it. So.
Oh, boy.
And other than that, you know, of course, the Seahawks won.
Yes, and the Mariners.
And
both
the Mariners are on top. I mean, that's just hard to believe. So,
I can't believe
so,
it.
So, yeah, no, there's hope.
There's always hope. There's always hope.
Don't have to wait until next season yet.
Yeah, that's right.
There's always next season.
Yeah, there's always October baseball, huh?
That's it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Sarah, how about you? I know what you've been doing mostly.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
sure.
basically it. It's been
anything
rehearsing
more?
This opera, baby. Yeah.
That's it. And how about you, Grace? Same?
Yeah. I mean, we've been hard at work getting ready to put this show on for the island and surrounding neighbors. But yeah, I think some of us, like we visited the Bird King, Oscar the Bird King, out on Maury Island. So. Mm-hmm. This is my third time doing a production with Vashon Opera, so I have a few favorite little haunts that I love. I love going down to Point Robinson, and
me too.
Yeah, Andy and I were just talking about the mountain was out the other day and being able to see that.
Are you from Seattle?
No, I'm from the Portland area, actually.
Okay, but you did know the mountain is out. You know? Yes, not everybody yeah. knows that phrase.
Yeah.
Know?
Does Mount Hood come and go like that?
She sure does. Okay. Yeah. I actually, where I live, sometimes on a good day, you can see Mount St. Helens and Mount Hood at the same time.
Lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, how about you? I know you've been practicing.
Yeah, we've been really busy. Actually, on Sunday, we had our first rehearsal with the orchestra, which was actually over in Tacoma. But so those of us on the island traveled over there. It's always amazing, that first rehearsal with the orchestra, where you really hear everything come to life.
Yeah.
Usually in rehearsals, we're mostly working with a pianist and a piano reduction, and our amazing pianist, Claire Forsman, did an incredible job, you know, playing all the instruments in the orchestra on two hands.
Wow.
But that first day with the orchestra is magical.
That's got to be exciting.
It's truly magical.
I can imagine. Gee whiz. Well, my week wasn't too exciting either, except that I had two things happen. As I've said here before, I had cataract surgery earlier this year. And it gave me 20/20 vision, which is absolutely amazing. Amazing. I've worn glasses since the fifth grade, and to have perfect vision is incredible. But my right eye was always a little bit cloudy. You know, it was good acuity, but anyway, they have a thing they called a YAG. Don't ask me what that stands for, because I don't know. But I went over yesterday and had that done. My eye is perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Yeah, it's amazing. Just clear as a bell. And
now you can see the runway when you land.
Yeah. let's not get carried away there, Craig. I might see it, but I might hit it pretty good, too.
I was going to say, you can come to the grocery store for me and read the cans.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Well, I may need my readers for that. But yeah, I'm pretty impressed, I have to tell you. Hey, today is a significant day, as we always say. It is National Play-Doh Day. Did anybody bring
any Play-Doh? I can smell it from here.
Yeah, I was going to say, anybody bring any Play-Doh with them this morning?
Got some dried up pieces.
Yeah. Well, there are always those laying around, for sure. So September birthdays. September 16th birthdays. I have two industrialists, two actors, and one musician. The industrialist, 1875, James Cash Penny. Anybody know who that is?
Like J.C. Penny?
Like J.C. Okay. Penny.
Oh, Penny.
You're tracking.
Yeah, about that, huh? J.C. Penny. Yeah. And in 1888, W.O. Bentley. And now, Craig, you ought to know this one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom. Bentley Motors. Which is eventually bought by Rolls-Royce. And I think, are they still being produced? Yeah, you know
they
that.
Are. They basically are using the same body. They just changed the grill.
Yeah. I change the grill every year, huh? Okay, and our two actors, are you ready for this? 1924, Betty Joan Persky. Anybody know who Betty Joan Persky is? I bet you looked it up, Craig. Yeah. He did. Lauren Bacall. Lauren Bacall.
Oh.
Yeah. She started her career at age 19, if you can imagine that. And, you know, wonderful actress. And, of course, Peter Falk. And one more thing.
Yeah, one more thing.
1927. And the musician, of course, is B.B. King, Riley B. King was how he was born. But B.B. King, 1925, 100 years old, would have been 100 years old today, which is pretty interesting. We always do today in history. I've got some significant events that happened today. 1620, the Mayflower departed Plymouth, England, for the New World with 102 pilgrims and about 30 crew. So I see Bruce over there going, yeah.
Yeah, kind of late in the North Atlantic season to make a crossing. So yeah. Sort of like.
How many days did it take them, do you know?
Ooh, I have no idea. A long time.
I thought for sure you'd have that right off the top of your head.
Well, they say that Plymouth was established, or somebody, I think I read that Plymouth was actually landed upon in mm-hmm. December.
So it may have taken them that long.
Which is 3 months.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that's a long time. You know, I finally got to see Plymouth Rock, and it's not that impressive.
It is not impressive at all. I'm from that area of the country, and it is really not.
Well, it's impressive that it already had this 1620 carved in it.
Carved in it. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I was going to say, what a bunch of idiots. So they leave at a terrible time on the ocean, and then they arrive at an even worse time.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Man, good job, us.
Well, they had to have been really hot to get out of England, that's all I can say. Okay, so 1810, priest Miguel Hidalgo y Costilla rings the church bells in Dolores, Mexico, issuing a call to arms known as the Grito de Dolores, which is the cry of Dolores, which is calling for the end of Spanish rule. Today it is celebrated, it's easy for me to say, as the Mexican Independence Day.
There you go.
So it is there,
July. Viva Mexico.
More or less.
Mexico. That's it.
Mexican independence, more or less.
Now, this one I find very interesting. 1940, President FDR signed the Selective Training and Service Act, which is the first peacetime military draft in the U.S. And I find that very interesting. This was in September 1940. Pearl Harbor was 1941, just a few months later. He probably had some idea something was coming, don't you think?
Well, nearly a year later.
Yeah. Yeah,
Pearl Harbor's a year later.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they knew it was coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, of course, the war had started in Europe in 1939.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, they just, and most of the U.S. was preparing for a European war.
Exactly.
And that's why Pearl Harbor was such a shock to the country, because they just didn't conceive of having a Pacific War.
Exactly.
Got a quick question for you, Bruce. But I don't know how prepared they were. Wasn't the Secretary of State, in fact, meeting with the Japanese in
ambassador.
Washington, D.C. Yeah. on the day of Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, he was.
That's why they call it a surprise attack.
Yeah, amazing how that works.
Like the pilgrims showing up in December. Yeah, surprise!
Exactly. And this one is in honor of our guest today. In 1966, the Metropolitan Opera House opened in Lincoln Center in New York City with Leontine Price as Cleopatra and Antony and Cleopatra. Have any of you played?
No, but that is a very famous and maybe infamous moment in the Metropolitan Opera history because it was a very extravagant moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My wife and I got to go to the Met last year and totally blown away. I mean, what an incredible venue. And, of course, the opera was over the top. I mean, gosh. All right. So before we get into talking about the opera and all, we always like to go around the table. And our new guest is...
Hi, it's Allison Pohl, Artistic Director of Vashon Opera. Very excited to be with you all this morning.
I knew that's who that was. This is your third time here with the opera?
It's my second time on Voice of Vashon. The last time we sent our general director maestro, Jim Brown.
That's right.
But both times that I have been here, I have had very trouble getting to Voice of Vashon.
No.
So I hope that I'm... This is the last time I'll be late to Voice of Vashon.
Oh, you were right on time.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, not a problem at all. So at this point in the game, we like to ask our guest to tell us a little about themselves. Give us a little bio about who you are. And let's go ahead and start with you, Sarah.
Okay. Well, my name is Sarah Coit. I'm originally from Spring Hill, Florida. Whenever we list ourselves, we always talk about our degrees. So I got my undergrad at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and my master's at Michigan.
Go Blue!
Yay! And and been singing for a while now.
Yeah, I would guess. And did you sing? Well, obviously, you sang in college. And
Yes.
All right, Grace. How about you?
Hello. Yeah, my name is Grace Skinner. I'm one of the many mezzos actually in this production, which is awesome. It's like mezzo mania over there. And I'm a Pacific Northwest native. I'm from the Portland area, grew up just a little north of Portland in Vancouver, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I did my undergrad at Portland State University and then moved for a brief stint to Indiana for my master's at Indiana University at the Jacobs School of Music there. And I graduated in the infamous year of 2020, which was a hell of a time to start a performing career.
Yeah.
But I'm just really grateful to have been able to somewhat keep that momentum and be performing and So yeah,
this is great and kind of fun being back in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, performing in the Pacific Northwest. Were you performing at other places?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah, I've worked with Atlanta Opera. Mm-hmm. I was a young artist a few years ago in with Opera Naples in Naples, Florida. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, so that was very different area, especially since I was there right after one of their big hurricanes. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was their whole rehearsal place or space was flooded, so we were... you know, having to rehearse in different spaces. But that, you know, I think that's a testament to the community, for sure.
Oh, boy, for sure. And, you know, Sarah, I didn't ask you, and you've performed other places as well? I mean,
oh boy.
Some
yeah.
idea?
For sure, yeah.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have.
I mean, I did, after college, I spent 2 years as a resident artist in Salt Lake City.
Wow.
I've been at Santa Fe. I've sung at Seattle Opera before. God, I can't even think right now, but it's,
right.
Yeah, that's I'm a lot of places.
All right. I figured so. Andy, how about you?
Yep. My name is Andy Pappas. I'm a baritone based in the Boston area. This is actually my third production with Vashon Opera. Yeah. I was here in 2018, which was that the 10th anniversary, Allison? I think so. For La Boheme. Mm-hmm. And I was also here in 2022 with Grace. We performed actually kind of in a partnership in the first act of Ariadne of Naxos as the I was the music master and Grace was the composer.
All right.
I was in that opera too.
Yeah, I know. It's such a small world.
Reunion.
I was reminiscing because Allison and I met like 12 or 13 years ago.
Wow.
And we essentially like hadn't seen each other in 10 years since that production.
It's a
very small world. In fact, such a small world that, and maybe this will come up later, but Sarah and I just did a production of Cinderella in Wichita, Kansas.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
But the other Cinderella. We'll talk about that later, though.
Yeah, I was going to say that there are several adaptations of this story, this very familiar fairy tale of Cinderella set to opera. One of them is in Italian, and that's the one that Sarah and Andy did recently in Wichita. But we are doing the beautiful Massenet French version, Cendrillon. And to Grace's point about how there's mezzos galore in this opera. Mm-hmm. There's not only mezzos galore in this opera, there's women galore in this opera.
Oh.
There really is no male true lead. There's no heroic lead. We have Andy, who is the daddy, Cinderella's daddy, and of course, a very important role, but to live in that sonic soundscape of women's voices, in particular two mezzos as the lead characters of Cinderella and Prince Charming, is kind of a rare oral experience as an opera goer. And I think that people really need to come see it to hear this experience that I mentioned of the two mezzos in the lead roles. And then the other lead character is the fairy godmother, who's a high coloratura soprano whose voice is very flexible and malleable and sings lots of high notes and just a really interesting, as I said, sonic experience to be a part of. So make sure not to miss this one.
All right. Well, go ahead, Craig.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to ask, you talked about the voices and the singing. I'm curious, we're all familiar with the story of Cinderella. You know, we've read it or had it read to us and read it to our kids and seen the animated movie. Mm-hmm. Is this the same story or does it have a little different twist to it? Or, I mean, without, you know, spoiling.
Don't give it away.
This one has, I would say, more similarities with the traditional tale, certainly than the Italian version. The Italian version is kind of a surprise. This is the Cinderella you want to like bring your kids to because it's the one they're going to recognize. There's a fairy godmother. There's
glass slippers.
There's an evil stepmother. It kind of has it all. This is definitely a more magical Cinderella than the other Cinderella versions that are operatic.
If I may, also, in addition to having those iconic visual cues that make you think, ah, Cinderella, the one that I know and love, and while we do welcome families absolutely to come to this production, it's appropriate at every turn for all ages, we also want to remind that this is actually not a children's opera. This is a very serious grown-up opera in French. It's beautiful romanticism, the end of the Romantic period. Massenet is a composer that you might not know by name, but we certainly do in the voice world. And he's one of our most treasured French master composers. And he was beloved by all the other composers as well. In fact, so many other composers dedicated their compositions to Massenet because he was known not only as a fantastic composer of just every single note is pretty, but as a teacher as well. So many of these other famous French composers would dedicate their pieces à mon maître Massenet, to my master, Massenet. And it's just amazing to be part of Massenet's imagination of this story that really is more about the familial bonds between, for example, Cinderella and her father. And then there's also the comedic stepsisters and stepmother as well.
But, you know, the thing that fascinates me is that the story can be told in a different language, and yet you get the whole story. By the way, are there superscripts?
Yes.
Okay. But, you know, you don't really need them.
You really don't.
No, it's the acting and the way that the performers perform tell the story.
And the music, too. I think that's probably one of Massenet's strongest suits is you can, and really for a lot of opera, you can listen to the music. I know some people that go to the opera and like to close their eyes because the music is so incredible, and they can, like, it's like you can see the story without even watching the stage. But of course, open your eyes and watch it too.
Yeah, of course,
that's the best part.
Well, I was really amazed at the Met is how raked the stage was, and how what a different perspective it gave you seeing it that way.
Yeah, let me ask you about the performance space. I mean, it's taken Vachon a long time to get a performance space like the VCA. How is it working there? How does it compare to other stages that you work on? And what are the pluses and minuses of VCA as a performance space?
It's a beautiful little theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
It is little.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But that's great. I think, like, the intimacy is it's lovely. There's the wing space is small. That's all. That's one thing I'll say. But that's
there's a lot of people on this stage.
Yeah. But once you're, it's a really high quality theater and all. It's
how many people are in the production?
Oh. Wow.
You would know.
You know,
50.
It's got to be 50 at least. We have, in case people don't know, in this production, a full adult chorus made up of Islanders who love Vachon Opera as much as Vachon Opera loves them. And they've been with us for years. This is our 16th season. This is the start of our 16th season at Vachon Opera. So we do have the chorus. We have a large cast of characters, both small and big. And then we have five ballet dancers who are joining us, also from Vachon Island. And they, because it's French opera, perform a ballet. And they not only perform a ballet, but they act as well. And they interact with Prince Charming, with Grace's character, very, very much. And it's hilarious. And it is really, like the character's name, super charming. So come see these ballet dancers, this chorus. The sound is spectacular, I will say. I've sung in Vachon Center for the Arts several times, but also as an audience member. It really favors the voice. It really is an easy place to sing. Mm-hmm. And because it's so small, the audience at VCA gets something that you could never get at the Metropolitan Opera.
Of course.
Which is seeing the facial expressions of these singing actors.
You know, I've often said of that particular facility that the singing or the music quality is exceptional. I do have a problem with speaking voices, though. They tend to get lost in that theater for some reason. I don't know why, but
thankfully, you won't have to hear much of much speaking at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's all singing.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, so to kind of dig into the characters a little bit, and, you know, you talked about, like, there are so many mezzos in here, right? And so I have a note, and were that I the opera geek that Truman is, I would authentically be able to say and not read that the role of Prince Charming is written as a trouser role for a Falcon soprano. So, but, you know, you have all of these women on stage, and, right, you have Prince Charming. So how do you, you know, other than, like, walking around stage blind because you can't recognize the love of your life when she is not in heels and makeup, right? You know, how does Prince Charming sort of distinguish himself as, you know, Prince Charming?
Prince Charming, yeah.
Well, I since this is a radio show, I'll just say I'm 6'2", so I'm a rather tall person, and I think that oftentimes has been helped me a lot in the audition process, and I oftentimes am cast as you say, trouser rolls or pants rolls, as we call them sometimes, and which I love. I love doing pants rolls. I think it's really fun to play with gender and in a performance space. And a lot of times these characters are kind of queer coded in a way too, because it is sort of this, like, there is a little bit of, just as it is with all opera, there is a certain amount of suspension of belief, right? To allow yourself to be transported somewhere to a world, you know, that when you walk through those doors, you're kind of, everyone sort of collectively decides, okay, we're deciding to go somewhere together. Wow. And that is very much true, you know, in this fairy tale. But to get back to Prince Charming, I think he's this character that is so full of ennui and angst. Yeah.
And not particularly bright.
He writes poetry. What was that?
And not particularly bright.
Come on.
He's growing up.
He's a young person, you know that he writes poetry in his in his free time. And speaking of which, too, I think, you know, all of these other girls, like the dancers and all, you know, the other people who come to the ball, he's just so nonplussed, so couldn't care less about. But then when Cinderella shows up, I think there is this sort of magical connection, right, that they have. And then after that, I think the thing that really connects them is Cendrillon has this beautiful moment where she is kind of speaking in poetry to him as well. And I think he really, for me as the artist, I think that's where he really starts to fall in love with her, is hearing, oh, this person has a deep soul like I do. And then of course, you know, later on it's the, well, now we have the shoe that I guess we'll try and try on all these women to see. But I don't know. It was dark that night. Who knows how much they had to drink?
Yeah,
I mean,
there you go.
Anyway, so, but I always come back to that. Like, you know, if you really approach these characters from a true place of authenticity, it's always going to feel valid and less hokey corny, you know, and if you all decide to go to that place together. So hopefully that answered your question.
Beautifully. So, no, I was just going to ask, I know that this is fits right into this. I know that singing an opera has got to be physically demanding. I mean, it just, I can't even imagine doing that myself. But being on a smaller stage, does that change the amount of effort that's involved, or and how demanding is this particular opera?
I'll take that.
It doesn't, but everyone has kind of their own reality with that question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because specifically with this role of Cinderella, it's something that we would call a sphician role, that either a soprano or a mezzo can do it.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little, it sits on the higher side than I'm used to hanging out in for 2 hours. you know, so there's, I do have to really think about pacing, and this isn't the most, like, I spend a lot of my time sitting, which is kind of nice. Yeah. So I'm not as, like, physically exhausted at the end of the night, but it's, yeah,
it must
it's
be really
hard.
Demanding on your voice, though.
Yeah, and you just have to be smart and think, you know, because really sometimes you can get really emotional and you're like, whoop, went too far.
Yeah.
Kind of, blew it out a little bit, and you got to walk it back and fix it. It's a constant readjustment.
Yeah, I can imagine.
This is kind of a, it's a big sing for you.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bigger sing even than the Cinderella we did in.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're singing like practically the whole, anytime you're on stage, you are singing.
Act three is like four arias in a row. Yeah. It's crazy.
Four in a row.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would also add that regardless of the size of the theater, we sing with our healthy, good, practiced technique, no matter what the nature of the theater. I think we just always strive to sing the best way we possibly can and be excellent.
You know, just to follow up on that, speaking of the size of the theater, is something, a question I've asked before. Do you get more audience feedback from a smaller venue like this than you do from a larger venue?
I will say that, especially for a company like Vashon Opera and the community of Vashon, I've worked in a lot of small communities. Mm-hmm. There is nothing, you can sing on all the grandest stages in the world. There is nothing like singing for a community that really loves opera and supports it.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, I think, especially if you've worked only at bigger houses, to come and sing a place like Vashon and see the people rabid. I mean, this is, it's not, this isn't, of course we're in the greater Seattle area, but we're not, this isn't a major city here on the island. And it's the best. It's just, there's nothing like it to hear people on their feet and locals, not people who came from far away.
Excellent.
Let me follow up on that a little bit. Recently, Allison begged me to perform in the last opera where I played the most important part.
He really did.
Falstaff. I was not Falstaff, but I was the troll. and I'm remembered for this wooden head that was masked on me, and particularly memorable were the many facial expressions that I and emotions that I
emoted.
Yeah,
right.
But I digress.
Thanks.
But I found the opera company to be a wonderful family of individuals who come from various places and get together here, and then they go into other places, and they come together other places. Has your experience, hopefully this is a positive response, has your experience on Vashon been similar? How's it been rehearsing with this opera company?
I will say that anytime I come to the island, the second I step off the ferry, actually the second I step on the ferry, I feel like I'm going home. And I've only been here three times.
Oh, wow.
But people recognize me on the island, and I think the second I step into rehearsal, the first time, I get a hug. Someone hands me a piece of fruit from their orchard, and they say, "Do you have everything you need on the island? Where are you staying? Oh, I know who you're staying with. Oh. It's a great place. In this business, we sort of have to be fast friends. Okay. On day two, it's like, okay, let's all hold on tight because here we go.
There you go. Yeah,
and Vashon is no exception.
Yeah, it's kind of like I've sort of likened this industry almost like summer camp.
It's totally summer camp.
It's like for adults, where you get together with potentially people you've never met. Oftentimes, I usually at least know somebody,
or somebody who knows somebody.
Exactly, because this industry, the longer you're in it, the smaller it gets. But but it is like you are all deciding to be emotionally vulnerable with each other on stage and to laugh and to have fun. And, so you do kind of have to be fast friends in order to make good art, for the chemistry to be real. But yeah.
And especially having had this happen recently, and this is not the case with this production of Cendrillon because it's such a wonderful group of just humans, but when there isn't the chemistry, you can tell.
You can tell
on stage and you can tell in the audience. Mm. And I was actually out watching last night one of the scenes that I'm not in, and you could just see, especially in that in the scene in the forest with Cendrillon and Prince Charming. It's just there's so much chemistry and energy, mm-hmm. and almost the entire cast is on stage at that point, and it's just bubbling up and it's intoxicating.
Yeah. Wow, that's you know, I love your analogy of summer camp. That really, you know, that really does. You know that feeling that you get if you've all been to camp.
Instant bond.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also want to add that we love our singers at Vashon Opera so much. And we want them to come back again and again. Mm-hmm. And Grace has been with us. This is her third production with Vashon Opera. And I realized just now when she was speaking that all three of them have been pants roles. This is Grace's specialty. Yeah. But of course, she can sing anything. And Andy has been here several times. He's also a favorite. And we're really lucky to have Sarah for her debut with Vashon Opera. Yeah. And we hope so badly to have her back again and again. Because
anytime.
you need to hear this phenomenal opera singer. Gorgeous she voice. Is really not to be missed. We're going to say that we were lucky enough to have her at this point in her career because the future is
really bright.
Yes, for Sarah. Right. I also want to mention about Craig being part of the Vashon Opera family. He really did make all of my troll dreams come true. And he was a spectacular troll, and we do in fact have an amazing picture from our photographer that I will send around of Falstaff and the troll looming behind him. And Craig was just the absolute mwah chef's kiss troll.
Wow, so you're a real Donald Trump Hillary moment there, huh?
Oh my gosh.
That's better than I could have ever hoped for in terms of the description.
Just looming there. All right, so
I was happy to be able to stand up.
I'd shuffle out on the stage, right?
What I hear boiling is in the future, we're going to have a great historical debate about Craig Bellis and John Whalen and which trolled better.
Oh, right? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it'll be a great artistic sort of who brought what to that troll role.
For our opera people, John Whalen played a troll in another production that was put on here, and he was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, he played Oscar the Bird King to the T.
Oh.
Yeah.
He couldn't, well, he spoke troll.
He did.
And so
he invented
was
the language.
Very, very yes. humorous.
Yeah. I feel like there's definitely room in our forest scene for a troll.
I sense an encore.
It could be bad.
Reprise role.
Yeah. Did you see the troll?
You heard the expression upstage. Be careful what you look for.
That's right.
Well, speaking of languages, troll or not, so we know now, right, that this is in French, which, you know, speaking of romanticism and chemistry, and okay, it's French, you could do it, Italian, you could do it, but of course there's operas in German.
Like our next opera?
Hansel and Gretel. That should be in German. When I think about what should be in German, that, right? So, mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, there's operas in English and, you know, in kind of every language. And it does feel a little bit like each language lends itself a little bit to a, you know, sort of the culture of the opera. So talk a little bit about all of the languages you sing in, right? And which seem to lend themselves, which you prefer.
I think a lot of it sometimes boils down to repertoire. I myself, as a baritone, I do a lot of work in Italian and actually English. But my mezzo counterparts here, I think, probably have more experience in French than I do. I've only done a few French operas. So a lot of that boils down to repertoire. But we have versatility in all languages. Some of us sing in Russian, in Czech, and Spanish, too. Incredible opera, Florencia en el Amazonas, premiered at the Met a few years ago by Daniel Catan. And so opera comes in every shape, and not to mention any Eastern languages as well. Opera has been happening in China for longer than it ever has in the Western world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you find one language more difficult than another to sing?
Czech is so hard.
Yeah.
Russian's actually kind of easy.
Yes, yeah. Russian's not too bad.
Really?
There's like the kind of noise. Yeah.
I have to add, I lived in the Czech Republic for quite a while.
Ooh.
And the Czechs are very proud of their language. They consider it to be the most precise Slavic language.
Oh,
And sure. I think yeah, but that's right. It's like you, there's.
Yeah. Yeah, when you try to repeat something they just said, they go, what?
What?
Yeah. They're proud of their opera, too.
Yeah.
Also, I was going to say that because it's in French, it has the beauty of the French language also going for it. And that contributes to the beauty of the opera. The music and the language are married, and it just creates that fantasy that you want to let yourself fall into and enjoy letting the sound of the language and the music wash over you.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, and it, I mean, obviously you can kind of sort of feel cultural stereotypes, right, coming through. And I just, what language or what opera is great in English?
I mean, so much.
So much.
I think
what, like what, but what, you know, when, again, to be very stereotypical about it, right? You think about French and romanticism, and I think about, like, you know, Italians and romance and humor, and right, Spanish and passion, like just to really like a huge broad brush. Mm-hmm. So when I think about American,
there's great, incredible American opera, and I think we've been unfortunately sort of through, I don't know, preference or deference. Led to believe that great opera doesn't happen in our native language. But back 40, 50 years ago, before supertitles, opera was always done in the local language. And so it's only through technology that we have the benefit of hearing all these different languages. But if this opera had been done in a community like Vashon 50 years ago, it absolutely would have been translated into English. And I think English has, I mean, we can look to Gilbert and Sullivan. It's amazing what we can do with the English language. And I think sometimes, yeah, we're missing out a little bit.
Yeah, and there's Baroque operas in English. There's so much English repertoire. It's incredible.
Yeah, and so many of even Shakespeare's works have been turned into operas in English, as well as in foreign language. Mm-hmm. All of the composers were fascinated by Shakespeare, of course. But then there's also famous American plays that were turned into operas, like Streetcar Named Desire and The Crucible and so many.
Doubt.
And yes, and even
really? Oh, my
God. Other titles that you know from movies like Dead Man Walking and things like that.
There's The Shining.
The Shining, yeah, exactly.
Really? Yeah, The Shining is an opera?
Very much then dealing with American ideals and ideologies and right exploring the American experience.
For sure, and that's represented on stage just as much as the operas in foreign languages represent those cultures on stage.
You know, the one thing I find about English, though, is that you can say more with fewer words in English than many languages. So I'm wondering if that sparsity, if that's a word, is if that has any effect on when you, like, for example, if you say something in French, it has this lovely, you know, sound to it. And then if you translate that into English, it's like, does it have the same, I don't know, emphasis?
It depends on the composer and how the composer has said it. I think Jules Massenet set Cendrillon in such a beautiful way, working with his librettist, that it not only does it sound beautiful, but it, like, it sounds beautiful. I don't know how to say it.
No, I understand. Yeah, the language itself sounds beautiful rather than just the music, right?
Let me follow up on that, because I'm always interested, and I'd like to hear from each of you, you know, as a performer in this sort of production. I mean, what's the dialogue that goes on? Because this opera's a century and a quarter old. You know, it was done in 1899 the first time. It's been performed numerous times around the world. You know, how do you enter that sort of conversation with the past, with the present, with the future in putting an opera together?
The story of Cinderella is, I think it was like 200 years old by the time this opera was even written. So I think that it was drawing on something that was already kind of timeless, I guess, in a way. And so I don't think that that's really changed. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm fascinated with languages. And when you say a particular phrase in one language, it has a very different meaning than when you say that same phrase in another language. And that's because you don't have all of that history that you've learned up to that point. And so I always am fascinated with how those nuances change when you're singing it in an opera. I mean, it strikes me as it's got to be more authentic if you're doing it in the language that it was written in somehow, because of all the history that brings you up to that point.
I mean, I think so. I'm a bit of an opera purist, I confess. I do prefer opera in original language for that exact reason. But just so you know, we all study these foreign languages extensively, and many opera singers speak these languages fluently or at least semi-fluently, and we certainly know what every single word means in the opera, not only the ones that we sing, but the ones that our colleagues are singing, so we can act and react because we're actors just as much as we are singers.
Sure.
And they are doing such a beautiful job of storytelling, right, of really showing the audience of the relationships between these characters. And you know, this ain't Disney. You know, this is opera. You know, and they really are putting something quite moving and powerful on the stage. And also, for an opera that's this beautiful, it's not performed that frequently.
Right. Crazy.
So this is really an opportunity that is... it's impossible to miss. You have to see it now because we just don't know when it'll be performed again. Mm. And it won't be performed with this incredible cast of voices that we've chosen so carefully. And it's just absolutely promises to be a beautiful experience for everyone.
I was just curious about the staging. Is it sort of set in the what we would imagine is the traditional Cinderella time period, or what's the staging and costuming?
It's very grand. There are ball gowns galore, and our costume designer Alex Lewington is a true artiste. Yes. She really is a treasure, a gem. I have no idea how we're lucky enough to have this woman live in this part of the country, because she takes her work incredibly seriously. Every detail, every button, every ribbon.
She's very historically accurate too.
That's right.
That's very important to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She is a period garments expert. And I've never met a costume designer who puts so much thought and effort and care into her work, and it shows.
So that is the question then. These costumes were designed for this production, is
that
correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They literally built my costume on me when I went for my fitting.
Wow. Same with me, yeah.
Wow.
And Alex, our designer, has a team of stitchers who actually sew pieces of fabric together into these beautiful garments.
Are they mice?
Yeah, are they mice?
They should be mice.
I mean,
but they're human, actually.
Yeah.
Shift gears just for a second here. You did mention that some of you had been out to see Oscar. Have you been able to do anything else on the island, or you just been so busy with rehearsals?
I mean, we've certainly been very busy, I think for myself, I have friends on the island now. And I was out with, for those who know, Susie Hedrick and Benno Bonkowski. And Susie was a very long-time booster for the opera company. So I spent an afternoon with them admiring their view and picking from their orchards. Which is lovely. And drinking Vachon wine, which is just the best.
All right.
We had some time on Saturday, so I went to the Saturday market here in town, which was really nice. Live music. I love going down to Minglement and bringing a good book and having a latte. And sometimes there's also live music there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And again, coming back, being able to see people that I know and talking about the whole going back to the community part of this. It's happened where I was at the grocery store and someone went, "You're the opera singer." And I was like, "Oh, yeah. Like, we can't wait to see you again." So that just brought me so much joy. just being able to enjoy the charm of this island.
We are very glad that you were able to get on the other side of the microphone and listen to some of the music on the island, because we have so many musicians and performers on this island.
Yeah,
we need the individuals who can actually go and be patrons of the music.
Right. Well, you know, I've said many times, we have a population of about 11,000, and 50,000 of them are musicians, and the rest are artists.
That's right. Sarah, do you have anything you have to add to that? Or
I've been to Camp Colvos a couple times.
Shout out Camp Colvos.
Yeah, there you go.
Camp Colvos has been an amazing partner for us, actually, and we now do performances at Camp Colvos.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh,
we do. And I did force, hopefully they were willing participants in this, but I did force the cast to pose in front of Oscar the Bird King for a cast photo because we have started a new tradition at Vashon Opera that every cast is going to pose in front of Oscar the Bird King.
Oh, all right.
Visit our Instagram page or our Facebook page and you will see it there.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So, first of all, let me reiterate for everyone that there are two performances. And normally you folks do three, but...
we always do two.
You only do two?
Yeah. We do.
It was a dress rehearsal for friends and family.
But
sorry, that's the one.
The two performances that you want to get your tickets for, and there are tickets available... 7:30
on Friday, the 19th.
Yep, the 19th at 7:30, and Sunday, the 21st at 2:30 p.m.
Yeah. And that's at VCA, and tickets are available through VCA or through Vashon Opera?
Through VashonOpera.org on brown paper tickets, and there's a little picture of a ticket. Click on that, boom.
All right. I actually do not have my ticket yet. I did. I know. I'm sorry. I fully intended to do that yesterday, and I got distracted and didn't get it done. But my wife, I'm sure, is listening right now, and she's going to be. She's probably going online as we speak.
I would love to just say one tiny anecdote.
Yes.
We have a cast member who plays one of the spirits, who is one of the fairy godmother's entourage, and she told me a story that I just had to tell you all.
Please.
And that is that she heard opera for the very first time when she was in fourth grade.
Oh,
when
my gosh.
The outreach branch of Seattle Opera came to her elementary school to do a performance, and she heard an opera singer for the very first time, and she was inspired, and the seed was planted. Mm-hmm. And years later, she became a voice major in college, and she's now currently in college, and she is in our cast. And the soprano, the opera singer who she heard, the very first opera singer she ever heard, is our fairy godmother.
Oh my gosh, is that right?
Yes.
Now
and
that
so she
is
gets
amazing.
To share the stage with the very person who inspired her when she was a child in elementary school, and I'm so happy that our production is a chance for them to have this on stage
that
reunion.
Is that's just special. Spectacular. Thank you very much for sharing that. That is wonderful. You know, my daughter has been, my wife and I do a lot of live production. I mean, we go to a lot of live productions, and we took my daughter to see, I'm trying to now remember if it was Annie or anyway, one of them. And she was very little. I mean, very little. And the other audience members are looking at her like, you're bringing this little tiny kid to, you know, she's going to be making noise. And what she was, her attention was rapt. I mean, she was totally involved in the play. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in one of the productions we saw, there were some horse things going on. She was on my wife's knee riding that horse, you know, through the whole production. Anyway, so, but I appreciate that 4-year-old or 9-year-old. Mm-hmm. I was never a big opera buff, and my wife is a huge opera buff. And so it's one of the points of contention in our relationship. But for her birthday or our Christmas, I don't remember which, last year, I did get us tickets to the Met. And after seeing I think it was Tosca, yes, that we saw, I said, you know, I could become an opera buff.
All it takes is one time. One time at the opera and you're hooked.
Yeah. It takes the right one because in eighth grade I went to see a postmodern production of Don Giovanni and it put me off of opera for about 20 years.
I can see that. I can understand.
Yeah.
Tosca's a good starter. Yeah.
Cendrillon is a great starter too. The production we're doing is a great first opera. I would say it's probably the best first opera I've done in a while.
Agreed. All right. Well, Craig, you're up next week. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we got next week?
Well, we've got the former, now retired editor of The Beachcomber, Alex Bruel, who's going to be coming in and sharing some of his experiences as editor. And hopefully we can get him to be a little more biased than he has been in the past.
Yeah.
Because he no longer has to maintain that sort
that
of
neutrality.
That certain amount of neutrality. Yeah. So he will be subject to the Briefly's next Tuesday. I'd encourage everyone to join in on that. We also, by the way, I just want to alert people, the Voice of Vashon is starting its search for a new, we don't call them an executive director anymore, but a general manager of the Voice of Vashon, and we're looking for somebody who's a resident of Vashon. So if you've got any ideas or you're interested, get a hold of the Voice of Vashon, the Voice of Vashon .org info. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Greg. Well, thanks very, very much to the Opera Company for coming in. We really, really appreciate having you guys. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. I know that my wife is getting tickets right now. Right now.
Come to the opera.
Well, everybody come, please. And so for Bruce, Craig, Amy, myself, I'm Truman. We're signing off for now. And we will see you all again next week.